So this week on the podcast, we're going to pick up our conversation from last week where we discussed the struggles and the challenges of being a transformational coach and what we described as this transactional world that we now live in as coaches and that our players and parents are often operating in. And we're really pleased to have Will Ray, who's a longtime basketball coach, a mentor and friend of mine for a long time, to join us on the podcast. And Coach Ray is going to tell us a little bit of his story, and we're really going to try to dig into this question of what are you willing to be fired for? Because I think if, as coaches, if you can drill down and be able to land on a purpose that goes beyond whatever it takes to keep my job, that there's a peace and there's a power that comes from settling on that mission. And Coach Ray has a pretty interesting story of how he sort of landed in that place in his career.
Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive on Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 101, What Are You Willing to Be Fired For? With our guest, Coach Will Ray. So if you're like me, you probably buy most of your books through Amazon. So for those of you who have been waiting for it, the day is nearly here. My book Calling Up, its official public release date is September 3rd, and you'll be able to get it from your online bookstore, whether that be Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, as well as many bookstores across the country. The pre-release response feedback has been very affirming from so many readers of the book that it has given them not just a clear vision, but a plan for building a transformational culture. So I'd be grateful for those of you who haven't read it, if you would order and buy your copy today. For those that have read it, if you go to Amazon and leave a review, that would be fantastic. Once again, Calling Up will be shipping by September 3rd and available in some bookstores out there. So buy it today. Now let's get into our conversation with Coach Will Ray.
So Coach, you want to tell us, first of all, just a real quick background on where you're at and maybe a little bit of your coaching journey.
Well, first of all, Nate and JP, thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of your initiative here. I think with the work that you're doing is a super important work. Oftentimes in the coaching business, we spend a lot of time forming and developing the players, and forget about forming and developing the coaches, right? And if you form and develop one coach, the exponential influence that he has on maybe hundreds of athletes can really go a long way. So my hat's off to the two of you for this great work that you've embarked on. I think it's going to bear a lot of fruit. So thank you so much. And thank you for asking me to be a part of it. What are you willing to be fired for? Great question, right? Just someone wanted to ask, what are you willing to die for, right? And not that firing is anywhere near the equivalent of dying, but a similar question nonetheless. My background, I started out in coaching about 45 years ago. I guess that dates me a little bit, but I started out as a middle school coach and quickly rose up to the high school ranks and was a high school coach for 8 years and had an incredible opportunity to get involved in Division I coaching as an assistant at the University of Evansville in Southern Indiana to a great mentor and friend of mine, Jim Cruz. Very much didn't realize it at the time, but very much as I look back on my experience with him, very much a transformational coach. And then within 4 years or 5 years period of time, I was offered a Division I head coaching job and, was thrown right into the fire, right? I mean, very much a transactional business, right? You're evaluated on your wins and losses, how many people are in the stands. There's often, an academic component to it. People expect you to graduate your players and to help them stay out of trouble and grow up and be mature young men and so forth. But really the bottom line is, we all know at the Division I level and other levels like it, it's a bottom line profession. And in my case, you know, after 5 years, the program wasn't trending in a direction that not only the administration didn't expect, but that I didn't expect. I wanted to see us do better, and I was fired. And so, although I have always felt, again, without having the title of transformational coach, I had always believed and still do to this day that what attracted me to the coaching profession was precisely the opportunity to work and sow seeds of success in the hearts of young men. In my case, I've always coached boys or men. And I've always felt that that's what attracted me to coaching. As much as I loved the game of basketball, I really loved sports in general. I loved baseball as well. And I could have just as easily probably become a baseball coach or manager. But what attracted me to this profession was the profound influence and the platform that a coach has, and the opportunity, which can also turn out to be something that's negative, right? If not done well, but the opportunity to really invest oneself in the maturity and the growth and the development of young people. So being fired at the Division I level for me, it was just a really watershed moment in the sense that it brought me back in a very real way to realigning my professional path with my intended outcome when I first started coaching. Look, I've had great experiences. I spent 19 years coaching college basketball. Wouldn't trade any of it, including the experience of having been let go from my job. And it was great. But that particular moment really helped reestablish in my mind why I got into this business in the first place. And in 2004, I decided to leave college coaching largely because I realized that what I intended to do as a coach can be done well anywhere. As long as you have a team or a program or a department to lead of young people or of coaches, you have the opportunity to help transform lives. And when I came back to high school coaching in 2004, I took my current position at Northridge Prep School in Niles, suburban Chicago. And it's a small all-boys Catholic high school with 180 boys. And many of my friends in the profession said, "What are you doing? You know, you're doing what? You're leaving Division I coaching to become the head coach of a high school, let alone a high school with only 180 kids? You know, don't you want the big facilities and the great resources and the tallest kids and the best athletes?" And I, you know, of course, I amuse myself with that perspective, and well-meaning as it is from my many friends in the business. But again, it was not about where once planted, right? It's about blooming, as they say, where you're planted. And if I can have one or two or three or four or five, you know, guys or a team of guys to help influence, then I'm living out and fulfilling my dream, right? Which is to help others. So sorry for such a long introductory comment here, but yeah, I mean, what was I willing to get fired for? I was willing to get fired for running a program with integrity, never bending the rules, the NCAA rules to recruit, to give ourselves an advantage in recruiting, to try to make sure that all of our players would graduate, and that we would demand much from them with the overriding purpose of helping them become great men, men who are going to become great fathers, hopefully, great husbands, great professionals, outstanding citizens, great friends to others, and that would help lead others, hopefully, in the way that I felt many mentors had led me.
Coach, your story is incredible. I really want you to kind of, if you could, share a little bit about just some of the struggles that you were facing when you were in the program. You're coaching in college, year four, year five, you're not getting the results that you want. I'm sure there was pressure. I'm sure you felt it from the outside, from the administration. Can you share a little bit? Because we have a lot of coaches in our mentorship program, a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast that are in a similar place. You know, they're feeling the pressure from the parents, from the administrators to get the results and maybe to sacrifice some of this transformational coaching principles and purpose for those type of results. Can you kind of share a little bit about your own personal journey there?
Yeah, I mean, JP, I think you hit it right on the head. There's at that level of competition, obviously, as you advance, I mean, there's pressure to perform and to succeed at every level of coaching, from high school through the MBA or professional levels, if not basketball. And obviously, as you advance, there's greater exterior pressures. But, you know, I always felt during those years that the pressure I placed on myself and the expectations I had of myself and of our program were never exceeded by the pressures I felt outside of, you know, from my administration or the boosters or alums, et cetera. And of course, you know, professional credibility and prestige professionally is very important. In fact, I even share this with our coaches here today. I'm also the athletic director at Northridge, so I have the opportunity to mentor our coaches in other sports. And, you know, professional prestige and credibility is very important because I think a transformational coach is more effective if he's also displaying competence professionally, right? And I'm not saying this is right, but the guy who continuously goes 0-20, unfortunately, our culture doesn't give him the same level of prestige or credibility that they give to John Wooden, for example, who won 10 national championships, right? Now, the purpose of that success, if channeled into a transformational philosophy, then you've got the tiger by the tail, right? I mean, the purpose of that, to me, I always look at performance and success on the court or on the field as the byproduct of a process of transformational coaching, right? That's the byproduct. But that byproduct can also, it's almost like a cycle, right? That byproduct also attracts others to what that coach has to teach and say, right? So we tend to follow the coaches or professionally in any field, we tend to want to know why people are successful, right? And that success in and of itself drives for many that quest to develop professionally, to get a greater insight into what success is all about. And so to me, while I was having my struggles at as a head coach at the Division I level, I also saw it as being in conflict with my overarching purpose, which, you know, hey, if I don't show a level of prestige or credibility as a coach, then my message doesn't have the weight that you want it to have. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but, you know, to say that, you know, we don't care about winning, or we don't care about professional success, and yet try and advance or promote a transformational message, to me, one works against the other. I think it's both and, right? It's ultimately, what's the overarching purpose? The overarching purpose is to transform the lives of people and help others and serve others. We do that by being excellent in our professional work.
Yeah, I think that's why personally I was so excited to see Tony Bennett, you know, win the national championship this year, because you can see that he has that very transformational purpose. And when he had an early exit there the year before, you're just like, you want to see these guys that are doing things the right way.
Absolutely.
Have the results, because you know that that will help this movement or this message around transformational coaching. I totally 100% agree and understand what you're saying.
You know, in my upbringing as a coach, JP and Nate, no one was more influential to me than John Wooden, right? And I believe I've read everything that's been written about him or that he's written himself. And I started doing that at a very young age. And I actually met him when I was a very young coach at a clinic and had the opportunity to chat with him very briefly. But what was it that attracted me to John Wooden? Well, obviously, it was the fact that he was a national championship coach, right? And so I wanted to know, what is it that made this man successful? Well, as you peel back the layers, it wasn't the UCLA high post offense or his 2-2-1 zone press or his switching man-to-man defense, although those things obviously are important. But what made John Wooden successful was the vision that he had for the role of a coach and how he can impact the lives of others, right? And so, that's why I see this importance placed, for the right reasons. Again, I underscore that, for the right reasons, to be as professionally competent as possible. And Tony Bennett, as you cited, is a perfect example of that.
I think one of the things that a lot of our coaches ask a lot of questions about, and this is maybe a two-part question here, but obviously you've been doing this for a while, and you know, have a pretty crystal clear way of articulating what your ultimate purpose is. I wonder, you know, how did you land on that? Is there a point in your career where you look back where there was a decision that I'm in this because I want to transform lives, or was that a process? Was that the result of influence from, I mean, you mentioned Coach Wood and you mentioned Coach Cruz, but for that to become your personal mission, you know, was there a process that kind of you went through where you really landed on that place being the rock and sort of the bedrock of your coaching philosophy?
That's an excellent question, Nate. You know, I as I think back, I don't believe there was, you know, there wasn't that aha moment, so to speak. I think for me, it was more of a gradual awakening and realization, because if you coach, even after a number of years, 2 or 3 years of coaching, you're going to experience some frustrations and some difficulties along the way, right? So how do you deal with that, with a difficult loss, right? Or how do you deal with a losing season? How do you deal with a, you know, with the question of motivation or trying to help players, you know, work harder or whatever it might be? And, you know, it just seemed for me that it was kind of a gradual process of realizing that success, to be measured merely by tangible results, is not sufficient, right? And, you know, you always hear that from people that have been ultimately very successful, that you can't win enough, there aren't enough championships, enough Player of the Year awards, enough scoring championship awards or whatever. And you hear this often from many of the NBA players, right? A lot of them in the later years of their career, after they've accomplished much individually, they all want to be a part of that championship team. You know, they want that ring, as they say. Well, what is that? You know, what does that appeal to in the human spirit that compels a man to say, look, I'll take less pay and I'll give up some of my individual success to be a part of a team success or a group venture, such as winning a championship. And I guess it's not the trophy itself, it's the process, right? And so I think for me, it was a gradual awakening to this as I started out coaching, that there had to be a greater purpose for this, that, you know, that big win is short-lived, that really outstanding championship was just, okay, great, for a couple of days, maybe for a week or a month, but okay, so what? I mean, what's next? You know, there has to be something deeper and more profound. And for me, a lot of it, you know, ultimately the gradual awakening came also as I grew in my faith too. And, you know, and I wouldn't say that that was really the motivator early on in my coaching career, but as I advanced and matured as a man, as a husband and father and so on, my faith became a more tangible component, and I saw that the two kind of worked hand in hand. So again, I can't point to that one aha moment, although I always seem to gravitate to coaches such as John Wooden or, you know, Tom Landry, you know, Dick Bennett, in fact. Speaking of the Bennetts, Dick was a mentor of mine, Jim Cruz, and others who had seemed to have a much stronger foundation or something motivating them beyond just simply the tangible success.
Coach, one of the things that I've started to see in a lot of coaches out there, when they've experienced the results, they've started to get those wins, they've started to realize that that's not where the peace of mind comes from, right? And I think, you know, you mentioned John Wooden. John Wooden talks about that peace of mind comes from knowing you did your best that you could. Do you feel like you have found peace in coaching? Because I think there's a real struggle. Like, we can have a transformational mission and we can start to get results, but I don't think that just necessarily guarantees that we're going to be able to sleep well, because this world is very transactional, as Nate kind of alluded to. And if you found peace, what are some things that you've done to find peace in coaching, regardless of the results?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And I guess, again, I just have to point to, you know, not a particular point as far as, but again, just kind of a gradual, if you can imagine, almost an inclined plane, so to speak, that moves upward. I mean, my awareness of what really is fulfilling has been on that incline plane for 40 years. I can honestly say that I didn't see it as clearly, you know, 35 years ago as I saw it 25 years ago as I see it, or saw it 10 years ago as I see it today. So again, just think of an incline plane going upward. My personal fulfillment is much greater today, and the satisfaction and the peace of mind is much greater today than it ever has been. But again, it hasn't been like it wasn't there, then it was there. It's just been a very gradual incline plane. So I don't know if that's a good description or not, but you know, just realizing that, you know, especially as you get older, and now some of your players do come back, you know, some of the Northridge players that I've had over the 15 years here, and even some of the guys that I coached in high school, my first go around in high school coaching. Now I talk to some of them, and they're having their own challenges as husbands and fathers. And you realize that, you know, I wish, you know, if I go back in time, I wish I would have done some things differently. I mean, I think I could have done some things a lot better. You know, sometimes my desire to see someone do well academically or give their best effort, I, you know, I probably could have approached it better when I was younger. I see it differently today, maybe a more mature, or maybe a deeper, more insightful perspective as one is more experienced and older, right? So again, to me, I can only point to that gradual improvement and gradual growth. And, you know, I've been able to drill down a lot deeper into my philosophy as I've coached longer. And so what my suggestion or opinion for a younger coach is, you know, if you see the transformational aspect of this, you know, keep working at it, keep drilling down, you know, examine yourself. What are your reasons for being in coaching? You know, again, when I was fired as a Division I head coach, these are the questions that I grappled with, you know, what, you know, and as I've told people, I woke up at that point and realized that I had my ladder up against the wrong building. You know, I was climbing a ladder. There were a lot of, you know, things that the allure of big salaries and success can be very attractive, right? I mean, it can pull a guy away from his original intent. And that's what I found when I was let go, is that I had to take a step back and reassess and ask myself questions. Why did you get into this? You know, what's your overarching purpose here? What is it that you want to see? And I realized that, you know, maybe I was on kind of in a rabbit hole, so to speak, that there was, you know, there wasn't going in a direction that I felt good about. So again, I encourage coaches to keep working at it. Once you see once you identify your overarching purpose, realize that you never arrive, but it's an ongoing lifelong process. You know, as I like to say, I'm a lifelong learner, and not only learning about coaching and learning about better techniques and methods, how I can impart my message of transformational message even better, more clearly or more effectively, but also a process of my own self-growth. You know, I often tell our players, current players, I say, guys, the reason I bring up some of the points that I bring up about character and about maturity and so forth, it's not because I'm there and you're not. I'm bringing these points up because this is a work in progress for me as well. We're sharing in this journey together. You know, a lot of people say, well, why are you still coaching? You know, after so many years, I just turned 66, and you know, and I feel I'm just beginning, you know. And like Bob Hope always said, when Bob Hope was 90 years old, somebody asked him, how much longer are you going to go in the entertainment business? He goes, retire. He goes, heck, I'm just getting started, you know. And that's how I feel. And I, as I tell our players all the time, I'm in this because I'm challenging myself. This journey is not just about you and your transformation. This is about me as well and my transformation. You know, I need to grow in virtue. I need to grow in character. I need to become a better man because I'm not as good a man as I can be. You know, I have my flaws and defects also that need to be worked on. And this coaching adventure, this coaching experience is as transformational for me as it is for you. And, you know, I think that's really helped our players because, first of all, it's an honest assessment. I'm telling the truth of how I feel. But it's also for them realizing that we're locking arms on a journey. Yeah, I'm a little bit further along than they are. You know, they're 16, 17, 15 years old. I'm much older, so I've had more life experience. to guide me. And what I'm hoping to do is to share my life experience with them, but realizing that we're all in this journey together. And at the end of the season, you know, that's an opportunity for my own self-reflection, my own self-growth, to try and now tackle, you know, the next season, and not only the next season, but the next chapter of my own life, and how am I going to grow and become better?
You know, I think your commentary there on chasing championships is so interesting. I remember in my career, early in my career, we took a team out to a team camp at a college that was a really successful Division III college, not just in basketball, but, you know, they had championships in their trophy case. I remember walking down this hallway, and it was like one end to the other, you know, shelf after shelf after shelf of conference championships and national championships and all these different sports, trophy after trophy. And I remember standing in that hallway and thinking all that went into these titles, you know, and everybody wants to chase these trophies. And here they are just sitting here all by themselves. Like, you know, like there was an end to that. And that, for whatever reason, really stuck with me. You know, and later when we went on to win a couple championships when I was at Springville, the thing about those trophies that became so meaningful for me, and I even now, you know, go back and see them or come across a, you know, a t-shirt in the drawer or something like that, is that those trophies have come to represent people.
Exactly. You know,
they have come to represent a team that was close and that loved each other and that strive for something together. And, you know, I have relationships with so many of the names that are engraved on those trophies even to this day. And I think, you know, when JP asked that question about peace of mind, it's when you're able to start to see that representation, you know, of your journey as a team is not necessarily in some artifact that proves that you were better than somebody else, but when it represents what that felt like and the people that were involved, that's when I think it really becomes special. And as we said before, it gives you a place to land and be able to be anchored when the storms come, when wins and losses vary, you know, that you understand it's about the relationships and the relationships that last well beyond the trophy when it goes in the case.
Now we're going to take a break in our conversation with Coach Ray. He's definitely given us something really profound to think about. Next week, Coach Ray, Nate, and myself are going to dive into some practical ways in which you can really gain further clarity around your purpose, setting it as your North Star, and then some ways that you can make sure you are constantly headed in the right direction every day. Now, if you appreciate this podcast, the messages, the ideas, if you feel it has helped you to build a stronger culture, even just a small bit, by calling up today, right? It goes into this very question of what are you willing to be fired for? And it really provides a blueprint, not just to build your culture, but for finding peace and fulfillment in the coaching journey. It ships from online bookstores and is in many bookstores across the country September 3rd. So buy calling up today.